Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:25 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is October 23rd. Well, I thought we'd kick off today with Boeing, because it is a very clear example of a number of various different characteristics that we cover at the chart seminar. The first, of course, is this incredible acceleration that we had in 2017, where the share more than doubled. Then we had the loss of momentum. It broke downwards in late 2018. That looked like a completing top formation, and that was completely countermanded. The market went up near over 50% from the beginning of 2019 through until planes started falling out of the sky in the first quarter of this year. And since then, the market has pulled back and been ranging. So we had the acceleration, we've had the loss of momentum, we've had extraordinary volatility, we have ranging, we have time, we have size. Those are characteristics of a Type 3 top, which, and a Type 3 top never starts off as a Type 3 top. We either see an acceleration first, or we see a loss of momentum, and then failed upside breaks, and of course we've got plenty of those as well. So now the share is back. And in the region of the lower side of its range, we've had a bit of a bounce over the last couple of days. Now the very big question is whether this range is in fact going to hold, because Boeing is not just a major commercial and defense contractor, but it's also the biggest constituent of the Dow Jones Industrials Average. And that's another index which has been ranging now since the beginning of 2018. And it is within only a few hundred points of a breakout, and it was pretty much unchanged in here today. It has been ranging above the region of the moving average for the last couple of weeks. It's been bouncing from the MA on successive occasions over the course of most of this year. As long as that remains the case, we can probably continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Generally speaking, when we think about Dow theory, we would require a breakout by the transportation index to confirm the bullish bias in the overall market. The transportation index, however, has been holding a sequence of lower rally highs since the end of 2018. It is now coming back up to test that sequence, and it has been bouncing pretty admirably from the 10,000 point region over the course of the last 6 months. The big question now is whether it is going to be able to push straight through and up out of this range. But I think what's important is that both these indices are very much tied to the physical environment. When we think about what's going on in Google, well, we're talking more about the information technology and cyber environment, or the services environment. And the share was up $16 today. It is coming back up towards the upper side of this range that's been prevailing now for most of the last couple of years. And there are a number of pieces to the puzzle for Google that seem to be falling into place. I've seen some investment bank research, I think it was from JP Morgan or Morgan Stanley, which attributed a value to Waymo, which is Google's autonomous vehicle program, that is pretty much equal to the valuation that it attaches to its advertising and search businesses, which basically suggests that the share could double from a share price of $1,250, which is a no mean claim. Then there is the claim that they've achieved quantum supremacy. It's not on a particularly difficult, or I think perhaps not somewhat difficult is the wrong word, but meaningful question that they've achieved this. It was an attempt to come up with a randomized sequence of numbers. And that's an objective that's rather difficult for conventional supercomputers to do. IBM said yesterday that it would not have taken 10,000 years, it might have taken 2.5 days to achieve that if Google had known how to properly use a supercomputer. Google shot back in here today and said that they did achieve quantum supremacy, and they've published a paper in Nature to back that up. So now they're willing to at least stand behind the claim that was briefly released on NASA's website for a few hours only in late September. What is interesting is that the market that has reacted most acutely to this news is the cryptocurrency market. It was on this exact day back in September when we had the release of Bitcoin-backed futures, and what on the exact same day that news of Google's quantum supremacy broke, that the share pulled back by 2,000, or excuse me, not the share, the asset class pulled back by $2,000. Today we had Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg testifying about his Libra project in front of Congress, and then quantum supremacy confirmation coming through from Google again, and the asset class pulled back by $650. I'm not so worried about the region of the trend mean in here. The more important point is that there's a clear sequence of lower rally highs. There is ranges one below another that the breakdowns have been sustained. We would need a very clear upper dynamic and a break in the sequence of lower rally highs to question that this isn't still a downtrend. The pace of innovation that we're getting in quantum computers is off the charts. It is occurring at an exponential pace. What that suggests is that we're going to get doublings multiple times in a year, rather than the doubling every 18 months that was associated with Moore's law. And what that also means is that the range of potential questions that can be addressed by quantum computers is also off the charts. One of the greatest challenges that we had at the dawn of the digital age was having enough of data for the computers to analyze. The challenge today is having computers capable of analyzing all the data. And that's what quantum computers that their greatest potential resides in. It's in optimization. When we think about the masses of data that are being created by the biotechnology sector, by the genomics sector, in terms of the climate. But then let's just think about autonomous vehicles. Google, for example, is pioneering LiDAR, and that's how they think that they're going to be able to solve for driving. Tesla, on the other hand, is committed to using cameras. Well, that kind of data, regardless of whether one is using cameras or LiDAR, it is creating incredible quantities of data and that need to be analyzed in real time in order to allow a car to traverse down the road. That's most acutely relevant in a street condition rather than a freeway or motorway condition. Motorway driving is considerably less difficult than being on the streets, for the simple reason that you have pedestrians on streets and they're unpredictable. That kind of unpredictability is something very difficult to program for. One of the great things about quantum computing is that it offers line of best fit and optimization that is beyond the realm of what's possible today. If we had to project forward for what are the potential use cases for this kind of technology, then that is most likely where it is going to reside. But what it also means is that we're going to have to see something like 5G becoming much more commercially available. We're already seeing that companies like Samsung are releasing the first 5G phones, and those are already out there in the wild. Taiwan Semiconductor is producing the kinds of chips that are helping to pioneer that in terms of the 7 nanometer, 5 and even 3 nanometer technology. The company announced yesterday that they're going to be investing quite a lot of money in additional capacity to produce those chips. What it also suggests is that there's going to be a lot of infrastructure developed in order to pioneer this. Cisco Systems was certainly rallying on that basis over the course of the last few years. If it's going to find support, this is about where that needs to happen. And if it breaks down to new lows, we can conclude that some of the infrastructure-led story is losing momentum, that we may be moving more onto the use cases for 5G. But it is that massive throughput of data where we're going to get 10x speeds in terms of network capacity is probably going to be required to pioneer this artificial intelligence, machine learning, and quantum computing future, where the ability of computers to predict what are essentially random or chaotic systems is going to be the base case for a very significant investment boom. This is the kind of market opportunity that was evident in cloud computing back in 2012. It is a further iteration of that. What I find particularly interesting right now is that when we look at the ETFs that purport to track this particular sector, they had their best period in 2016 and 17, then pulled back extraordinarily violently in 2018. We've had a partial recovery. They're now coming, and we certainly have this, what looks increasingly like a triangular pattern over the last 6 months. It's testing the sequence of lower rally highs right now. We absolutely need to see a sustained move back above $40 in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. What my fear would be is that the cutting edge of this sector is very much concentrated in the hands of a small number of companies. What is currently out there in the market is rapidly becoming obsolete, and that the winners and the new use cases in terms of this technological frontier have yet to appear. And what that suggests is that there's probably going to have to be a significant reordering of the constituents of some of these ETFs if they're in fact going to perform like they want to. Now, when we then think about what else is going on out there in the wider world, well, we obviously have the Brexit conundrum, and the pound was in positive territory in here today. It's looking increasingly likely that the deal that Theresa May negotiated, plus additional concessions that have been made to ensure that it can pass Parliament, is in fact going to become the deal on which the UK's so-called exit from the EU is predicated on. That generally has been rewarded with enthusiasm by investors because it is the closest thing to no change that they could have hoped for. And that is positive for the wider UK market. Less positive, however, for the FTSE 100, which was in positive territory today, than it is for the more domestically oriented FTSE 250, which has broken up and out of the range that's prevailed for most of the last 6 months. When we think about what's going on in Europe, the DAX index is pushing up and away from its range. The euro is obviously going to be a consideration, but it has been rallying over most of this month. It is now testing the region of the trend mean. And this is going to be the big Rubicon. If it can break successfully above that, well, then we're back in a demand-dominated environment. I do wonder whether this is more of a weak dollar or a strong euro scenario. One of the primary reasons why the dollar has been strong over the last few years is because the Federal Reserve was reducing supply. That is no longer the case. They are now increasing the size of their balance sheet, and that continues. It's been going up just about every week, and they've gone from a low around 375 or 3.75 trillion to 3.96. That's $200 billion in the space of a month. That's a steep pace of increasing the supply of the dollar, and there is no mistake that the recent weakness of the dollar over almost the exact same time frame is in direct response to that. Well, the weakness of the dollar is a fundamental backdrop for why we should anticipate some the relative strength of the gold price. It's been pretty much range bound, albeit with a downward bias, over the same time frame. That is insulating gold and dollars from some selling pressure. When we think then about the extent of the rally that we've had in the pound, then it has taken a deeper toll on the gold price when denominated in pounds. When we then think about the Australian dollar, well, that is also consolidating here against the gold price, but it looks much more like the US dollar than the pound. The ASX 200 index, which has been rallying really rather impressively, has at least bounced from the region of the trend mean. It's certainly benefiting from the weakness of the Australian dollar. The resources sector, however, is now trading back below its trend mean. It needs to bounce from the current area if the medium-term trend is going to remain reasonably consistent. Generally speaking, if we're going to have a weaker dollar, and that does appear likely, it should be beneficial for commodities. And commodities were in positive territory in here today, closing on the high of the day following an intraday reversal. Well, when we start to look at this longer-term chart, it is increasingly looking likely that the continuous commodity index is in the process of breaking its downtrend. It's still a little early to be conclusive on that front, but when we then think about the fact that the Baltic Dry Index has so far been able to sustain the break up and out of what was an 8-year range, then if we look at the dirty tanker rate, that is also, after pulling back rather violently following the explosive move that we had 2 weeks ago. But the broader picture is that so far the move has held the breakout. And I think these are the more important points here, that we are seeing commodity prices starting to do better. We're starting to see the dollar easing back, that the Federal Reserve is adding more liquidity. Now, when we start to think about the total assets of central banks, then we've those are two whoops, that has not worked. That's a significant factor in terms of the continued advance in terms of global liquidity. So when we think about the fact that the dollar going up and the Federal Reserve reducing the quantity of money on its balance sheet, well, it has represented a clear move here that there's been a very similar advance in the total money on central bank balance sheets. At almost $200 billion has been added, very similar to what the Federal Reserve has been added to this total figure. The more important point is that the index is now coming back up to test the upper side of this range that's prevailed over the last 6 or 7 months. At least it is not breaking downwards. The real potential is the Federal Reserve is going to have to continue to raise the quantity of money that it is supplying to the repo market. That's before they even begin to think about an additional round of quantitative easing. It's likely they're going to cut interest rates again this month. That's an additional source of for dollar weakness and is also a potential, I think, fuel for additional liquidity provision in the emerging markets. When we look at the Asia dollar index, then obviously China does not want to have a stronger currency, but the Asia dollar index is starting to do better from here. When we look at the Latin America dollar index, there is the two big weightings in that are the Brazilian real and the Mexican peso, and that is also starting to demonstrate some support over the course of the last few weeks. We've had a clear upside weekly key reversal right there in early September. Then it came down and had an outside week at the beginning of October. This is suggesting at least a low of near-term significance. Now, when we think about the Indian rupee, it has so far been able to hold this 72 area, and it has been reasonably firm despite the fact that the government is lowering corporate taxes, is engaged in a fiscal stimulus. So far, that has not translated into a grave weakness for the rupee. Meanwhile, the Nifty index has continued to bounce from the 11,000 level immediately following the announcement of the corporate tax cut. It is back testing those highs. When we then think about some of the more troubled banks, well, Yes Bank has pushed back above the 50 rupee level. When we look at the logarithmic scale chart, it was the liquidation of some of the founders' shares, and back in early October was a clear catalytic event in terms of sentiment. It was representative of the last holder finally selling out. Since then, the price is up pretty significantly from 30 to 50. Now, there is still a downtrend, but it is looking increasingly likely that we have seen the worst. Now, the big question is, when is the company going to announce its recapitalization? When we then think about D1 financing, that was much more directly influenced by the threat of a default, and it did default on some of its debt. Well, that is still going downwards. So there is obviously, going in any crisis, going to be those kinds of companies that are right at the epicenter of risk, and those that were sold off as a result of contagion. Well, it's those that were sold off as a result of contagion have got the better potential to rally subsequently. I do think that it is within this sector of the Indian market that there is scope for additional, or at least for disaster investors to take some advantage. Then when we look at what's going on in China, well, there is the prospect that the hiatus in the trade war should help to stabilize perceptions about the outlook for the stock market. The A-share index is still holding the region of the trend mean and that psychological 3,000 level. The CSI 300, which has a rather long ticker, has been pausing below the 4,000 level for most of this year. It really does need to sustain a move back above it in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. I think the B shares in Shenzhen are probably a better barometer for the private sector, and that does not look like a particularly bullish chart. What it suggests is that under the hood, in terms of the health of the domestic economy, there is still weakness, despite the fact that we're seeing continued support for state-owned vehicles through the major indices. When we think about the outlook for the renminbi, it was in positive territory in here today. That is a response to the weakness in the dollar, but there is just very little appetite for a stronger currency in Beijing right now, and I continue to think it is very unlikely we're going to see it strengthening through that 7 level. The Hang Seng was in negative territory today. It continues to hold the 26,000 level, and I think it's still touch and go what kind of response those shares are going to have to the impending technical recession that's probably going to be announced when figures are announced tomorrow in Hong Kong. The Nikkei is continuing to hold this breakout. It was in positive territory in here today. It's back above the 22,000 level. It's broken its sequence of lower rally highs, and so has the second section index, and it continues to advance from here. What it suggests is that Japan is pricing in, and I think offers leverage to improving sentiment towards global growth, and I think that's one of the reasons why it is outperforming in here at present. Well, when we think about some of the factors that could inhibit that view, well, oil prices are stronger in here today, up about $1.34. That's back above the $60 area. The outlook here is that we could be potentially on the cusp of a recovery in commodity prices. With the continuous commodity index doing better, with some of the commodity currencies doing better, with the weakness in the dollar and Japan starting to price in the scope that we might be at the trough in global growth, then there is scope here for oil prices to start to rally. Certainly the lows do appear to be holding over the course of the last few weeks. There are a lot of moving parts going on right now, but I think we have to remember that when we think about the global outlook, it's monetary policy beats most other factors most of the time, and right now we're seeing just about every central bank in the world moving to increase the supply of currency. That should be good for the commodity sector. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.